Chuck, could you go through the who's online again?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Glenn de Saint-Jury, Karen Lentz, Aubrey Doria, Jeff Newman, Robin Gross, Ken Stubbs, Chuck Gomes, Cyril Chua, Greg Schwartz, John Bing, Liz Williams, John Nevitt, Olaf Nordling, Christina Rosette, Carrie Karp, and Marilyn Cade.
Anyone not listed?
Yes, Jay Scott has just joined.
Okay. Anyone else? Did you call Sophia?
I'm sorry, Sophia. I did not, and you are listed as on. My mistake.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yes. Yeah.
Going once, going twice. Okay. And people.
Hi, Philip just joined.
Okay, thank you, Philip. So yeah, as people come in, hopefully they'll announce themselves. Okay, we've done the roll call. Does anyone want to update the statement of interest at this point? Okay, if you do, please do it to the list, and the overall one will get.
Okay. Yeah, I did want to make. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I want to make one quick observation. John Nevitt isn't interested in listening to Neil Diamond anymore.
I understand. Thank you very much for that addition to your statement of interest. Somebody's in a very noisy place.
I think that might be me. I drink Kindred.
Okay. Oh, glad you're on. Okay. Thank you. Okay. The next thing is agenda review. It sounds like people are still coming in, but that's good. So the first thing is to go through the status chart, confirming that it's an accurate picture, and especially looking at recommendation 19, which was reworded at last meeting just to make sure that everything is still fine with that one. Then we go to issue 6, review any wording changes that came out of the committee and there have been some, I think, and then basically have the final committee discussion on the wording of 6 today. And then after that, you know, we'll basically firm it up so that we can close the, you know, finish the report and send it on. Same thing after that with issue 20 and with implementation guideline P, which is where I basically broke it up into a recommendation and then guidelines, make sure that that is okay, go through, review the wording, and try to have our final committee discussion on that one. It is a rather long one, but we've been talking about it for a bit. After that, implementation guideline Q, that one should be very quick, and I've got it in the minutes, in the agenda, that's basically a general statement that could have been in several of them and was pulled out to be in one place. Then basically review the 2 open staff implementation questions. There have been some answers given on the list, and just want to make sure that there's no more detail to be added to those or that those answers are indeed the answers that we want the staff to take away. A quick review of action items still pending for this committee and what's coming up in our, we have 1, maybe 2, but preferably at most 1 more meeting, and then if we have time, any other issues. Any issues, problems, questions on the agenda?
Aubrey, hi, it's Craig.
Hi, Craig.
Aubrey, it's Marilyn. Can I ask a point of clarification?
Sure. Craig, were you just introducing yourself, or did you want to comment on the agenda?
Yeah, I have a question on the agenda.
Okay, please, Craig, and then Marilyn.
And it may be covered when we go through issue 20, but I would like to get clarity on the role of the GAC and the SOs in the objections process.
Okay, certainly that is in there, and so that can be, you know, should be. One of the topics of discussion in that.
Okay. Thank you.
Marilyn?
And this may be covered as well under the last point, review action items. The action items that remained from the reserve name working group and from the pro working group, whether they're going to fit into this report or just have a statement which notes how they're going to fit in, is that going to be discussed under review action items?
There is a reserve name for new GTLB, and yes, we'll report on where we think we're at on that. I didn't know that there were any large discussions that remained.
I don't
have, but we can certainly go through that and we can certainly add it as an action item for a future list. But we'll see after the action items whether there's anything else we need to do.
Okay, thanks.
And Chuck, were you trying to...
Yes, a logistical thing I want to communicate to Glenn. Glenn, I don't know why, but on the meeting view, and this happened last week too, it quit showing people after a certain point. So, for example, Adrian and Jay Scott are not showing up. That's just something you can communicate to the coordinators.
I'll do that. Have you done a refresh, Chuck?
Yeah, yes, I did several
times. Okay, I'll do that. Thank you. I'll do that immediately.
Okay. So now going to, if there are no more questions or issues on the agenda, we'll move ahead with it. Going through the recommendation status, basically there have been no changes for a long, long time in principles. Principles A through G. Actually, no, G was added 2 times ago and was stable as of the last meeting. Are there any comments on A through G? Okay. Going to the recommendation table, 1 has remained stable, 2 has remained stable, 3 was added 2 meetings ago, was considered stable at the last meeting. 4 has remained stable. 5. 6 is still being discussed, and we have an agenda item on it today, so I won't go into it now. 7 has remained stable. And please interrupt me if at any point I say something is stable and you believe it should no longer be stable. 8 is stable. 9. 10. 11 has been incredibly stable for a long time. 12, stable. 13 is stable. 14 is stable. 15 is stable. 16 is stable. 17 is stable. 18 is stable. 19 was reworked at the last meeting, and there was an indication of broad consensus. This meeting was a time to make sure that that was indeed correct, that the wording is in there correctly, and that indeed it does have broad support without any recorded concerns. Okay. Hearing nothing, I'll call it.
Evie, it's Liz. I have a clarifying question on 3, please.
On 3. Okay. Going back to 3.
Yep. I didn't want to interrupt you in your list.
Well, I haven't quite finished the list.
Beg your pardon, keep going.
Okay. Okay, I'll note that there's a question. 20, you're right, I'm almost finished the list. 20 is on the agenda for discussion today, so I won't go into it. Under the implementation guidelines A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, and M and N and O have been stable for a very long time. P is a new one that will come under discussion today, and it is basically half of the contribution that's been going back and forth between Philip and Chuck and the discussion group with all of us commenting, and I divided it into a recommendation and an implementation guideline. In our discussion today, we'll have to make sure that I got the division line right, and of course we have to go through the text to make sure that it's acceptable to the committee. Then, and then Q is one I added. There was an implied decision to add it from the discussion group yesterday, which I acted on, and we'll need to see whether it is an appropriate implementation guideline that people accept being there, and if the wording is correct. So both of those, both P and Q, are marked under the support column as just proposed, because while they may have discussion group support or my understanding that there's support, there's been no check on them of any sort. So Liz already mentioned having a comment on 3 or a question on 3. Does anyone else wish to question, comment, anything other than 6, 20, P, and Q, which we'll be getting to?
Yes, Robert, just Kent Stubbs. I have a comment on the process after Liz is done,
okay,
please.
Certainly. Anyone else in that queue? If not, Liz?
Yep, thanks, Abby. Abby, I just wanted to add this on and any other business part of the agenda because recommendation 3 includes words that have been the subject of a lot of discussion, and I wanted to just make sure we're consistent, particularly with respect to enforceable, the use of the word enforceable. So if you wouldn't mind just holding that thought until the end of the meeting to just make sure that whatever the group decides is then consistent. In 3. If the group is happy with it as it stands, then fine, but I just want to make doubly sure that that's actually
okay. I've added that to other issues.
Thank you.
Okay, Ken?
Yeah, just a quick process thing. We've been at this now for roughly 18 months, and there are thousands of man hours that have been put into this thing, and it's probably one of the most important steps that ICANN has taken in many years. In many countries, let's say in the U.S., I'll use as an example, when they pass legislation, they make available the hearing, minutes on hearing and stuff like this. I'd like to ask you to consider the possibility of having the ICANN staff take the correspondence, all of these emails, everything that's gone on, which would not be difficult to do because, as you know, we're keeping these categorized by subject, and strip it out at some point in time or copy it out and put it into the website so it can be archived in such a way that it would be easily accessible in the future. I think it's important for people to understand the thought processes that went behind crafting both these recommendations as well as the implementation guidelines. It's just food for thought. I'm not asking for action on it now, but I think it's something that might be considered.
Thanks. I think it's a great consideration, and I don't know if the staff has the chance, but whether they could come back with at some point an indication of whether they thought that was possible would be a good thing, and then you know, we can think about it either within the committee or the council and make it a formal request if it needs to be.
This is Scott Bing. Could I have a comment to this?
Sure.
There is two rather different principles of interpretation of such legal instruments, and one of them looks to legal history like American law and my own law. Under other jurisdictions, like typically under common law, there would be no reference at all to the legal history, and it would be seen as absolutely a thing not to do. And in most legal instruments of this kind, they are thought to be interpreted as they stand without reference to the legal history, because there's so many conflicting reasons for comments to have been made during these discussions. But I'm not opposing it. I'm only saying that it certainly is not an obvious decision. It has to be done with a certain consideration for what the effect will be for the subsequent use of the recommendation.
Okay, thanks. I think that will actually be a fascinating discussion when we get to it. So I think we should probably leave it now. I've taken the request and the considerations down, and we can put it in a future meeting. I don't know whether it's the committee or maybe it's even the council, because it would be something that would apply in general and not just specifically to this, but I'll put it in a later discussion. Any other comments on the recommendations at this point before we move on? Okay, great. Issue number 6, and I thank you for that. I really do want to talk more about that. Okay. In issue 6, there's really two parts, and we've been talking about them separately. One was the examples, and the examples went through a revision and a reworking last time, and then basically Liz went through a reordering based on a recommendation that came out of the discussions that they be ordered in terms of those that had to deal with human rights, political rights, social rights, discrimination, and then those that had to do with trademarks and intellectual property separately. But the content is the same as it was at the end of the last meeting, so it's been resorted. I don't know if anyone has any issues with the examples list anymore, but I figured I'd ask. Are there any issues with the examples list before we get into the substance of the recommendation itself? Okay, great. I'll consider that as being in the process of gelling. Now, in terms of the Recommendation itself, the existing recommendation says, strings must not be contrary to generally accepted legal norms relating to morality and public order that are enforceable under generally accepted and internationally recognized principles of law. We do have the long-standing NPC concern relating to morality and public order. There have been extensive discussions in the discussion group and somewhat on the list and in meeting last time. And the discussion group is proposing a new formulation which reads, strings must not be contrary to the generally accepted legal norms relating to morality and public order that are recognized under international principles of law. There were two primary issues that were being discussed. One was the inclusion or exclusion of the phrase morality and public law, and the discussion group in its majority came out with keeping those in. The other discussion had to do with enforceable, and there was an extensive discussion on enforceable, and the word enforceable has been basically replaced with recognized. I'd now like to open the floor to discussion on whether we should accept the new wording, whether that new wording would have the same broad support as the existing wording, if not more. So please, who would like to be in the queue? Chuck? Chuck?
Philip?
Philip? Anyone else at this point? Okay, we'll see after Chuck and Philip have spoken. Chuck?
Okay, I know that Liz had asked David Maher for a response since he had dropped off the call yesterday, so I want to communicate that because I just saw it this morning. His response was he didn't care much for either formulation. Sorry about that. But he did have a concern with the term morality and public order. And I think he shared with me in the email that he had made this point in the call yesterday, and maybe people can tell me what the discussion was on this. He said he pointed out that ICANN has a fundamental obligation of promoting the global public interest in the operational stability of the Internet, and that public interest is a universal standard. Maybe vague, but it has a context from U.S. administrative law, public interest, convenience, and necessity. He went on to say, I think this context is internationally understood and accepted. We need a formulation that recognizes ICANN's ultimate obligation to protect the public interest and its non-delegable responsibility to make judgments. So that's the feedback you were asking for, Liz, in that regard.
I'd like to comment, first of all, I don't think that we actually talked about it much, and I didn't actually realize when David brought it up yesterday, insofar as it sounds like you're bringing it up now, that he was actually offering that as substitute for morality and public order. Is that what should be understood from
it? Again, I'm judging by the email only. That's my interpretation. But I can't answer that definitively.
Okay, because I hadn't picked that up, but as you read his email today, all of a sudden it occurred to me that maybe I should have. Okay, Philip.
Okay, just in response to that last conversation, my understanding was that David's premise was that the much broader issue of public interest should pick up morality and public order as well as a bunch of other things. And therefore, I think he was participating in that discussion about whether or not this should be a broad objection-based system or a narrow objection-based system. But anyway, all I wanted to say in my own right was that I support the wording that came out of that subgroup. I think it fulfills the objective we've had on the wider group for the last year or so, and improves the wording and clarity of our intent. So I think it was job well done.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else want to speak on this one?
Well, this is John Bing. I just did a Google on the legal and public interest. I'm not certain I'm I'm familiar with the U.S. law, but I see that the National Legal Center for the Public Interest contributes to the development of public debate and policy by providing the public and private sectors with timely information on key legal, legislative, regulatory, and economic issues, and so on. So it seems to me to be used in that context, at least, for the National Legal Center for Public Interest, that public interest is so broad that it is nearly meaningless, meaning something like democracy or something like that.
Okay, thank you.
This is John. Could I get in the queue?
Sure. Anyone else want to get in the queue while I'm building a queue? Okay, John.
Good. The only thing I want to say is that it sounds like there's some discomfort now from representatives from at least three of the constituencies with the phrase morality and public order. So perhaps if the chair is amenable, that you know maybe we could have another week to go back and see if there's any other language. Maybe public interest isn't the right language, as John mentioned, jumping. But perhaps there is something out there that would be better than morality and public order.
Yeah.
Okay, anyone want to comment further on that?
Just one thing, Avery. I think you yourself have indicated that one alternative might be to strike morality and only keep public order.
Yeah, that was the suggestion I made in the meeting. Thank you for bringing it up. Anyone else want to comment on this or on John's suggestion of basically, so if I were to rephrase that suggestion would be to accept the new formulation, in other words, to accept the formulation that has replaced enforceable with recognized, but to basically put brackets around the words pertaining to morality and legal norms and to discuss that further. Is that essentially what you would are you recommending in terms of, yes, accept a new formulation, but continue talking about morality and public order?
Yeah, and morality and public order, not
right, but the enforceable part of the thing you're saying, you would accept that.
Oh, yeah.
That formulation. So okay, so I'd like to ask people to sort of talk about, you know, their view of John's recommendation, as I've interpreted it, that we accept the new wording, but that we put brackets around pertaining to morality and public order and continue to just discuss that phrase a little longer. What do people think about that one?
Philip here to comment. Just
anyone
a couple
else
of things.
Want to be in the queue? Okay, Philip.
I'm not sure it's right to characterize three constituencies as having a concern. I had heard individual voices on our group rather than constituency opinions.
I said representatives of three constituencies.
Okay, sure. I mean, I just don't know what we're going to achieve in a further week to what we have discussed ad nauseam over the last few weeks, and in general over the last year or so. So I find delay a bit strange. I mean, from the BC's perspective, we can probably live with delay. I suspect there are others in the and other constituencies who find delay less acceptable. But that's just my own perspective in terms of this process being seen to be done in the wider context. On the idea about playing with the wording of the phrase morality and public order, I would counsel against it, only because that phrasing was originally chosen because it features in international law. It is not a separable phrase, and in law, not separable context, and it will help in interpretation and keeping the phrase together. Us playing around as amateur lawyers to try to divide something in between because of our common understandings or misunderstandings of words is not a path that seems wise for a group of internet experts and users to do.
Okay, thank you. Although I think we have probably as many lawyers in the room or the virtual room as we do internet experts and people who are both, but I take what you say.
Well, legal expertise has many varieties.
Yes. Anyone else want to comment? My personal view is that I believe that the wording has been there for a very long time, and I tend to believe with Philip in this case that we won't achieve a change in another week, and that perhaps there's more to be gained in basically indicating that there is soft support in the committee on that wording, and for people to contribute to the larger community, to the report, and to the council that needs to basically decide on these recommendations, their viewpoints on that phrase, among the other things. So while obviously from a personal point of view, I would love to see at least part of the phrase struck, I don't believe that we will succeed in another week at actually materially changing it in a way that will have broader support. I think if we get the support of the three of us or the four of us that are unhappy with it, we will end up with three or four on the other side that are equally unhappy with whatever we come up with. And so while there's a part of me that would love to keep talking about it, I just don't believe that that it would help us get our report out.
Aubrey, this is Chuck. Can I jump in?
Please do, Chuck.
Can I join the queue, please, Aubrey?
Liz, please. Anyone else?
Thank you.
John Bing as well.
John, anyone else? Okay, thank you. Chuck?
Okay, first of all, I think your assessment's correct, that probably we're just going to end up where we are next week. And I think that if we, at the end of this meeting today, ask all constituency reps to go back to their constituencies with the final recommendations for one final look, that the concerns with regard to this particular one can be communicated, and ultimately we have the opportunity for minority statements as they are needed.
Okay, thank you. Liz?
Yes, Abby, I just wanted to add a point from the report writer's perspective. I am delighted to receive any text from anybody to help me describe the complexity and the enormous variety of opinions that needs to be reflected into the report. At the moment, I mean, everyone has the 18th of June version, which was used in Puerto Rico, and much of that needs to be amended to take into account what the final version of the text is going to be, which will then need to be sent out to other ACs and SOs for their formal input. So if anyone feels like writing some particularly cogent paragraphs about the nature of the problem that we struggled with here, the way in which people had thought about handling it, the method by which we've arrived at the decisions that we may have, that would be very, very helpful, because the report is going to have to reflect the depth of the examination and the, I won't say torture, but perhaps that's what I mean, that the group have actually gone through to determine what the final text would be.
Okay, thank you. John?
Don't think. Just for the fun of it, I run the phrase through the legal search tool I have available for word law, and it comes up with a surprising number of references to national constitutions: Turkey, Lithuania, Romania, Belize, Cambodia, and so on. So I think Philip is right that this is a phrase that is very frequently used. And there seems to be a large 2,520 hits in the legal domain.
Okay, thank you. Philip was right about the phrase. He was wrong about us not having international legal expertise on the committee. So therefore, what I'm proposing, and I want to understand if there's any objection at this point to taking the discussion group recommendation, which is strings must not be contrary to generally accepted legal norms pertaining morality and public order that are recognized under international principles of law, making that the string that goes into the document, indicating that it's got broad support, but that the NCUC and several individuals have concerns about it, and inviting basically those of us that have concerns about it. And to be honest, I have been working on writing up my little contribution of concerns to basically contribute those so that when the council looks at it, they see a complete picture.
Abby, it's Liz here. May I just ask a supplementary question, please?
Sure. The question I want to ask, though, is there any strong objection to following that procedure at this point? I've got Liz. Anyone else want to be in the queue? Okay, Liz?
Yes, thank you, Abby. I really appreciate that direction, that if the group is going to agree to that direction. By the end of the meeting, though, we need to set some parameters about when that text would be submitted to me, because it needs to be incorporated into the report, which will be the subject of public comments.
At the current moment, the action item lists the requirement for that as the end of the day tomorrow.
That's right.
I think of end of day as end of day anywhere. I don't know how you think of end of day.
I don't mind whichever end of day anyone wishes to choose. However, Avery, I suspect that that's rather an aggressive.
Okay. Well, ask people to think about that and comment.
Yes, come
on
back
it
at the end.
At the end of the meeting.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else before we move on this one? Okay. Thank you. And I understand. Believe me, I understand how difficult it is to basically accept this wording and move on for some of us. Okay. And I appreciate it. Moving on to 20. We currently have wording that says, and I'm going to take this 20 at the moment first and then move into the piece that's the implementation guideline P. So we have the wording of 20 that exists at the moment. An application will be rejected if it is determined based on public comments or otherwise that there is substantial opposition to it from among significant established institutions of the economic sector or cultural or language community to which it is targeted or which it is intended to support. The recommendation from the discussion group that has been circulated through the discussion group and on the list and for the last, it's been iteratively discussed and circulated, is currently an application will be rejected if an expert panel determines that there is substantial opposition to it from a significant portion of the community to which the string may be explicitly or implicitly targeted. Now, things that changed to this, just to point them out, there had been discussion about should it be will or should it be may, and basically the ambiguity in that one was dealt with by adding the if an expert panel determines. It had been previously will be rejected if determined. But basically, the phrase if an expert panel determines basically called in a whole process so that it was trying to make it not be automatically if there's an objection it will be rejected. But there's really quite a process to go through. There had been questions about the word substantial in opposition, and those have been discussed in implementation guideline P. There had been discussions about significant established institutions, which became significant portion of community, which the string may be explicitly or implicitly targeted. All these terms have definitions that are included in guideline P. So I guess I'm not sure whether I should move on to guideline P at this point or open discussion just on this part. I guess first, before moving on, I'll ask if there's any comments that people feel they need to make before moving on to the guideline P, which sort of takes this and defines its terms and process. Anybody want to comment?
That was Philip.
Philip, yes. Did you want to comment, or did you want us to move on?
No, yeah, just a quick comment.
Okay.
And Chuck, too.
And Chuck. Right. Anyone else? Okay, Philip?
Okay, we may be saying the same thing. I just wanted to say that what we did in the subgroup was work, in fact, on an idea that Chuck had started off, which was attempting to make our life a bit easier by separating out the recommendation from the types of things we expected to be assessed during an objection process, and indeed describing the type of the process itself. So the current formulation in terms of the recommendation is intentionally short, but all the significant terms there, of which there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, are subsequently defined in terms of a guideline of what the panel will be looking at. Indeed, the process itself is defined. So that's what we had tried to do, was to make the recommendation simple, but then explain the process more carefully so that the intent of the recommendation was clear.
Okay, thank you.
Actually, I'm gonna defer to later.
Okay, great. So then I will then move on to trying to quickly read through implementation guideline P, since it's almost long enough to take the rest of the meeting. So proposed, you know, and as a proposed word would drop out, the following process definitions and guidelines refer to recommendation 20. Process. Operation must be objection-based. Determination will be made by a dispute resolution panel constituted for the purpose. The objector must provide verifiable evidence that it is an established institution of the community. Then after that, there's two pending options. One is, and that the legitimate rights and interests of the objecting community will be materially harmed or prejudiced by introduction of the proposed DTLD, but there was a counter proposal to move that down later in the document, later in the guideline, and I'll read that. And then the other one was, open parent, perhaps like an RCET pool of panelists from which a small panel would be constituted for each objection, and that's, Philip brought that up, but that was essentially contained in the reserved names recommendation. Okay, guidelines. The task of the panel is the determination of substantial opposition. A, substantial. In determining substantial, the panel will assess the following. Significant portion, community, explicit or implicit targeting, established institution, formal existence, and then the one that was added since I sent out the paper in Philip's last mailing, is detriment. B, significant portion. In determining significant portion, the panel will assess the balance between the level of objections submitted by one or more established institutions and the level of support provided in the application from one or more established institutions. The panel will assess significance proportionate to the explicit or implicit targeting. Those will be defined later. Community. Community should be interpreted broadly and will include, for example, an economic sector, a cultural community, or a linguistic community. It may also be a closely related community which believes it is impacted. B, explicitly targeted. Explicitly targeted means there is a description of the intended use of the TLD in the application. Implicitly targeted. Implicitly targeting, it really should be targeted for parallel. Implicitly targeted means that the objector makes an assumption of targeting or that the objector believes there may be confusion by users over its intended use. F, established institution, an institution that has been in formal existence for at least 5 years. In exceptional cases, standing may be granted to an institution that has been in existence for fewer than 5 years. Exceptional circumstances include, but are not limited to, reorganization, merger, or an inherently younger community. The following ICANN organizations are established institutions. GAC, ALAC, GNSO, CCNSO, ASO. G, formal existence. Formal existence may be demonstrated by appropriate public registration, public historical evidence, validation by a government, intergovernmental organization, international treaty organization, or similar. And then finally, detriment. Evidence of detriment to the community or to users more widely must be provided. Now, that's quite extensive. We've talked about many of these things a lot over time, and what Philip and Chuck and then the discussion group have done is tried to pull it all into one coherent set of points. I'd like to open up discussion now on accepting the new 20 and P together and open up the discussion on that. Anyone in the queue?
Chuck.
Chuck, anyone else?
Greg.
Greg, anyone else? Okay.
Okay, there's been a little bit of exchange this morning between Philip and I on the use of detriment instead of material harm, and I appreciate the response, Philip, on the fact that the detriment is also a legal term. What's the advantage of detriment over the material harm term and why you chose that?
And while you're considering this, I'd like to add, if we use the word detriment, but in the definition, detriment, comma, or material harm, comma, I'd like to ask if that resolves the definitional issue. It may just be a cultural difference.
So you're suggesting have detriment or material harm?
I'm suggesting, yes, a way of doing that if there's two close definitions, but they vary by country of law.
By the way, that sounds okay to me, but thank you.
John may have a better analysis on this, but my own reasoning was that the test of detriment, particularly things like consumer detriment, user detriment, is a broader term that seemed to be closer to the objective that we were pursuing with this recommendation, rather than the phrasing material harm, which is often used in a slightly different context, maybe material harm to a specific legal interest or an intellectual property interest or something like that. So it struck me that because here we were looking for a broadly community-based objective to prevent harm there, that the detriment was the better phrasing to capture the objective we had there. As I said, John may have some more precise insight on the differences between the two.
John, you've been called on to comment, and Greg, I still got you on the list, but while we're on this topic, John, would you like to add anything to this?
This is John Bing.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I have no insight in the interpretation of these two phrases.
Okay, thank you. So,
do you want that?
I missed the name because I was too busy talking myself. Who was asking?
This is Robin. Can I give it
to you? Robin, yes, on this particular topic.
Right.
Yes, okay. Go ahead.
So detriment is just a lower threshold. So you would be rejecting more applications if the phrase was detriment as opposed to material harm. Material harm is a bit higher of a threshold for rejecting the application. I mean, in legal terms, that's what it means.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we can come back to this if anyone else has comments later. Greg?
And my questions are about IGBP, some of the terminology in the phrases, specifically in the definition of significant portion. I'm concerned about the wording, the level of objection and the level of support, as it's currently worded.
What's your concern there, Craig? Is it measuring it?
Yeah.
You understand the objective, Craig? You're worried about how that will be judged? Is that the question?
I mean, to me, an objection is an objection if the objector is qualified and has standing. So I'm not sure I understand the use of the word the level.
Well, whether the level is the right way to express it or not, the intent is to look at the total picture in terms of support versus objection. Just because there's one objection, you need to look at that and how significant that is in the community versus the level of support. So I think it's helpful to look at what we're trying to do is to point out that the expert panel should look at the total picture, not just the objection, and weigh the two against each other. No.
At least it's not Neil.
I was just going to complain, but it's not Neil.
Okay. Moving on. So, yeah, so basically, I think that if I'm understanding, it's basically that there is a picture that this panel of experts are looking at. This is certainly not a decision that is imposed on ICANN or its staff. It's basically the panel is basically supposed to look at this thing in totality.
Avery, Philippi, that's exactly correct. I think the difference here, and that's why we separated out these concepts, is what's listed under process and what's listed under guidelines. What's listed under guidelines means that it's already been passed on to the panel and it's up to them to get on with making a decision. What's under process is perhaps a staff basing in terms of, is this objection something that qualifies for going to be submitted to the panel, and the real criteria there is that the objector must provide verified evidence it's an established institute of the community. So that's the only staff judgment that's necessary. Once it seems to be a valid objection, there's no need for staff to make a judgment on the quality of the objection. That goes to the panel, and then they look at these guidelines.
Fair enough. The other question I had in this section is under section F, which is the established institution.
Yep.
That was my earlier question about the role of the GAC and the ALAC
okay.
in this process.
Okay. I'll take a cue on that, but I also wanted to start with my understanding from this historically and what it's meant to do, and then other people can comment both on their own views on it and on my understanding, is that in the reserved names group, when we were talking about the non-category of reserved names, controversial names, which indeed this is to some extent mapped to, there had been a discussion of there are the established institutions, and we're giving an established institution definitely a way to comment. There may be others. There may be broader range concerns that come out of many individuals' comments, or a nation's concerns, or something else that basically then the GAC or the ALAC, especially, I think of it in terms of those two more than the others, but the others probably could say there is an important issue here involving this particular TLD. That yes, there's no established institution that it belongs to, but we believe that there's something that needs to be reviewed here. So by some action of an advisory committee, they can ask the expert panel to take a look at it. And so it's basically a way of not denying the world that isn't established institutions a way to request a review. So that's sort of a historical and I guess a little bit of my personal view, and I'd like to open the floor to others who want to comment, correct my view, or the history.
And Aubrey, if I can just add to what you're saying there, and that's why I threw that in about the SOs and the advisory committees being allowable there. Now, whether we want to do that or not, we can discuss that. But that's consistent with what the intent was.
Aubrey and Chuck, this is Christina. Could I ask a point of clarification before we get into discussion?
Sure. Yeah. Very, very hard to hear.
Okay. Is the intention of adding those organizations, or is the intention there to allow them to object TLDs above and beyond those that, for example, you know, somebody wanted .gnfl? Or are we intending it to limit to just those that are contained or correspond to?
It wasn't a reserved name category for .gac, .alac, .gnfl. It was they were an objector just like any other established institution. And if they were an established institution for the purpose of objection.
All right. Thank you.
But would have to go through the same process as any other. How they made the decision to make an objection was their business. But once they made that decision, I believe the intent is that they would have to follow the procedures of any other establishment organization to, you know, to document, to indicate why there's harm, to submit it to the review panel, and that there isn't a greater. It's just they are an established organization among others.
That's right. That's my understanding as well.
And for the peers, just to say that, I was not agreeing on the discussion, but that was my understanding why it's in, and that seemed to be sensible and also recognizing a reality in terms of GAC's role in ICANN anyway.
Any other discussion on this point?
I guess it'd be helpful to find out, since that's one we didn't really firm up in the subgroup yesterday, if there's any strong objection to that particular sentence.
Could you ask that question one more time? I'm hearing there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of noise in the background.
Okay, I'll ask the question. In other words, the question was, since that one was not discussed greatly in the discussion group, I mean, it's been in the text for a while, but never really come under discussion, is there any strong objection to including that? This is kind of like, does anyone want to propose an amendment to remove that from what we're considering? Is there a strong objection to that?
And to be really clear, what we're talking about is removing the sentence that says the following ICANN organizations are established institutions: GAC, ALAC, GNSO, CCNSO, ASO.
Right. I understand that there's a staff issue with it, but is there a strong objection from others in this committee? Okay. Moving forward, then, what I'd like to check on and open up is, We've got recommendation 20 with replacement wording, and I want to confirm that we can. Well, the other thing I want to check is I have an NCUC recommendation narrowing to only include technical and legal objections. I'm making the assumption that this does not change NCUC's standing objections. Is that correct? I'll assume it's correct. And someone will tell me later if it is an assumption. So the NCUC objection remains at this point, and they are certainly not part of broad support on it. Now, I had a possible registry concern over how public comments are to be handled, and possible exclusion of institutions not specifically included in the list, and had been carrying a note that we may downgrade from broad support to support if registry community formalizes concern. Is that still an open possibility?
I believe, Aubrey, that we've, in the latest formulation, that we've dealt with most of the registry concerns that I was aware of.
Okay, so I can basically remove that as a concern for now. Obviously, in a minority statement, they can come back with it.
Right. Now, there's another question I'd like to raise on this, though, and you and I had a debate on this on the list, and Philip referred to it a little bit ago. And that's this, in the process part, would ICANN staff actually make the initial determination whether it was an acceptable objection before it's sent to the expert panel? And what I had suggested as another way to do it would actually have the, you know, refer anything, any objection, if they've followed the procedures, to the expert panel and let them do the whole thing, and including determining whether or not it's objection based and follows the requirements there. I'm not sure that I have strong feelings one way or the other, but I think it might be good if we spend just a few minutes on that. Did that make sense?
Yeah, that made sense. What I'd like to do, though, first is, and I'd like to get back to that, because then we're getting down into details, is first make sure that it is okay to replace the existing 20 with the new 20. And so among those that have indicated broad support for the old 20 Is there any objection to replacing it with the new 20?
And you're talking about the recommendation only?
The recommendation only at this point, and then we can get back down to the details and of P. Or is that not reasonable?
That's okay.
Okay. So is there any objection to replacing 20 as originally written with 20 as written now? An application will be rejected if an expert panel determines there is substantial opposition to it from a significant portion of the community to which the string may be explicitly or implicitly targeted. Anyone want to speak an objection that supported the previous one? No? Okay, then I'll accept that change as having the same level of broad support as the previous, with no pending concern from the registry constituency, but still having concern from NCUC. Now, moving down to P itself, before getting to Chuck's question, there's two other things I wanted to check. Chuck, you had included in yours, and the legitimate rights and interests of the objecting community will be materially harmed or prejudiced by introduction of the proposed GTLD. Philip recommended the addition of detriment and the paragraph explaining detriment. Do you accept removing, do you expect that as an amendment to what was proposed?
I'll have to speak just for myself. I think it's okay. There's at least one person in the registry that much prefers the material harm language.
Okay, yeah. Okay. I wasn't
asking
on that. What I was asking is, in the process, you had a statement, and the legitimate rights of interest of the objecting community will be materially harmed or prejudiced by introduction of the proposed GTLD, taking that sentence out and replacing it with a section that at the moment is either detriment or materially harmed.
Well, I'm okay with that.
Okay, so that change, I'll remove that. Before I ask people to support, I wanted to make sure that we have no more ambiguities or, you know, possibilities. Now, Philip had suggested the inclusion of a sentence, perhaps like the RSTEP pool of panelists from which a small panel would be constituted for each objection. Is there anyone that objects to including that in this overall P that we haven't got measured the level of support on yet, but does anyone object to that being included in there?
Sorry, I mean, just for clarity, that bit in brackets you're referring to, the RSTEP pool of panelists, that wasn't me. I don't know where it came from.
Abby, it was me.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Because that came up in the small group discussion.
That came up in the small, and that was also part of the reserve names recommendation.
Yep, that's right.
Does anyone object to that being in this particular proposal? No? Okay, then I'll leave that in. Then moving down, and I'm still going to get to your issue, Chuck. The issue now of detriment, as was discussed and as I think both Philip and Robin agreed on, that detriment is wider than material objection. We basically have three options. We can say it's detriment, we can say it's material objections, or we can leave it open to the panel's interpretation and say detriment or material objection. Other than those who have spoken on it already, is there anyone else that has a viewpoint? No. Okay, so is there any objection to detriment or material objection?
Material harm, sorry.
So basically including it as detriment or material harm. Yes?
It's Christina. I'm only speaking for myself, but I have concerns about if we include those. I mean, those are two different standards. So what would be the point?
I guess the point would be that the panel would then decide whether they were which standard was, and it may be a different standard used at a different time and different place.
Oh, wouldn't they? They could, either standard would apply.
Right, but they'd have to basically, in a decision, state which standard they were using. I don't know. Otherwise, we do need to deal with making a decision on detriment or material harm.
This is Robin. Can I speak on that?
Please.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand the distinction between the two different legal standards. If somebody said they were harmed, so you wanted to try to quantify the amount of harm, which is what we're trying to do here. So if somebody were harmed 0.0001%, they are harmed to their detriment. You have met the legal standard of detriment. You have not, however, met the legal standard of material harm. So it's an important distinction that anything that could be considered harmful to any aspect of them would fit the detriment standard, where material harm, you actually have to show some kind of an actual material harm before that standard is met. So I think it's really important we understand the distinction between the two and give the panel some guidance on what we expect them to follow.
Okay, I have a clarification question. Does material harm have to mean financial?
No.
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 Okay.
And I think that consistent with what we are trying to do with the whole idea of it being substantial, that material harm seems to be more consistent with that than detriment. Having heard what Robin just said and others have said in terms of detriment being a much broader category.
Okay. Philip, would you be willing to accept material harm instead of detriment? If it was your original recommendation for detriment. Are you on mute? Is anybody there?
Yeah, we're in.
Okay.
Maybe it's just you and I.
Oh, no. The laughter says no. So, Philip, are you still there?
Sorry, yes. I was.
Yeah,
I was,
would you
I was
be willing to accept leaving it at material harm and basically replacing detriment with material harm? I seem to feel that those discussing it tend to prefer the material harm lower standard than the detriment higher standard.
Well, let me just make a couple of comments. On Robin's characterization, I mean, detriment is indeed generally broader than material harm. I don't think it's quite as dramatically broad as Robin was characterizing it. Detriment here, remember, is also one of, what, 7 or 8 tests we've got her. You know, we've got to go right down those lists in order to get there. So we're not making a broad-based objection process. We're making a very narrow, very specific basis. And part of the reason I came to detriment, actually, was picking up a point that Milwaukee had made on the group where he was saying, what if it's a, I think it didn't give an example historically of an African language community. I think he used Hosa, didn't he, as part of his description there. And I was just thinking, well, how would that group go about proving this legal terminology of material harm versus detriment to their community, having passed all the other tests if those tests were passed. And I just thought that, in particular, where we're looking at not commercial interests and commercial harm, but where we had mentioned things like cultural community, linguistic community, detriment was just the more natural phrase to have there. But I say, if you want to go back to your earlier proposal having detriment or material harm and leave it up to the panel to choose one or the other depending on the nature of the community objecting, if it's an economic sector or community, that may be the most flexible approach.
Okay, can you put Carrie in the queue, please?
Okay, Carrie, anyone else want to be in the queue on this one?
John Bing.
Okay, I've got Carrie, I've got John Bing. Anyone else? Okay, Carrie.
Okay, I haven't been participatory in any of the discussion that's leading to the present discussion, so I may be saying things that have been discussed at tedious length, and please forgive me if so. But when addressing the a sense of unfair treatment that might be voiced by any sort of a cultural community, responding diplomatically and sensitively to that complaint, if it's an easy thing to deal with, surely trumps any quasi-legalese formulations that we might be able to come up with.
So basically you're speaking in favor of detriment.
I would want to include some recognition of sensitivity in the terms of that cultural community. Detriment is something that we are going to be deciding And if we're addressing concerns of a community that's at some distance from us, our notions of what's detrimental may be entirely inappropriate to theirs. So detriment in the as the concept is understood by the complaining community. And I have no idea how to couch that inappropriate language.
Right. Well, I was thinking that this expert panel should be wider than just we. And hopefully, and, you know, but we haven't gotten into the composition of expert panels, but that's a different issue, would be wide enough to be culturally sensitive. So that's a good consideration for constructing a panel. Okay, thanks. Carrie, John.
Sorry, my question is just born out of my ignorance of English. Non-material could also be, material harm could be seen as the opposite of non-material harm, and in my language, that very easily would be something that's not related to economy or physical damage, as opposed to something that is immaterial, or like privacy or things like that. But this is only a question if material harm is understood also to include, for instance, privacy, feelings or norms of that kind. I'm happy about it. It's a language question. But if not, then I think that detriment, that is a different scale, isn't it, from whether it is the level of harm that is inflicted, whether the harm is inflicted on something that is substantial or something like the pride of a cultural community, for instance.
Could we, in fact, define material harm or qualify the term material harm to include that, or does that go beyond the legal?
I would think that we start to getting very deep into implementation details. What I'd like to try and recommend is sort of similar to what I recommended before, and see if there's any objection, that we include in our recommendation detriment or material harm, and that in the iterative process with the staff as we go on implementation, as this becomes understood and they come back with questions, as Denise and others have indicated will happen as it gets into the board and such, that we consider perhaps to refine that, but that we don't try to actually be the legal scholars at the moment picking the words, and that we sort of go with something that sort of is expressing what we seem to be saying in that detriment or material harm.
Aubrey, if I could comment on that.
Yes.
If we do that, I think it's important that we understand that, assuming that they are different standards, then we're including both standards, okay? And to the extent that one is, if they overlap and one is broader than the other, in essence what we're doing is including, basically saying the broader one.
That's right.
Okay. So is there anyone, okay, understanding that, is there anyone who's essentially accepting 20 who objects to detriment or material harm?
This is Robin. I just wanted to echo Chuck's point that when we say both standards, we are actually saying the broader standard. I mean, just in terms of logic, that's what we're saying.
Okay, then I guess we should leave it at detriment. Anyone object to leaving it at detriment? And continuing the conversation. I don't know that we'll resolve the detriment versus material harm discussion. And we've already definitely gone over the amount of time I wanted to spend on this one, but it's important, so that makes sense.
Yeah, I suspect there probably will be concerns from some members of our constituency with regard to the use of word detriment instead of material harm, but I don't know that we need to spend more time on it now.
Abby, it's Liz here. Could I just ask a question, please?
Certainly.
I've just been taking notes as we've been speaking. So we remove materially harmed and we just have detriment. That's the final piece.
We've certainly removed the statement from the process.
Okay, that's fine.
Section that had materially harmed.
Yep.
We've got the recommendation made by Philip on detriment, and I don't think we've succeeded at amending that to material harm, though there's a pending concern on material harm that may need to come out in people's comments. Okay,
now,
thanks.
Now, one of the things that was in the version before Philip modified it was that there needed to be verifiable evidence that there was material harm, or in this case, verifiable evidence that there is detriment.
Well, that's still there. It's evidence of detriment to the community or to users more widely must be provided.
Okay, thank you.
So that was still there. The evidence statement is still there.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'd like to move on this with detriment and not material harm at this point. And that brings us to the last question that you had, Chuck, which was, and I don't know that that's even in here at the moment.
No, I don't think it is, but it probably is worthwhile for ICANN staff.
Right, okay. So first of all, I'd like to then see if there is any objection to, you know, especially from those who have given broad consent to 20, to accepting guideline P into the document. And I understand that there may be some more discussions on some of the wording, and I propose that we come back to some of these wording discussions perhaps next week, having accepted P, but we can still talk about some of the more legalistic issues if need be, but have accepted P in general. Is that acceptable to everyone? Does anyone object to that? Okay, then I'll put P in. As has been the case in the past, any of the new ones that went in this week, we'll come back to and we'll take a look at next week. And I encourage people, because on some of these difficult discussions like detriment or material harm, and the way I've included it in mine is I've got or material harm still in there bracketed and indicating that there was still a discussion. And while detriment is the accepted word at the moment, there's still an open discussion essentially on material harm. I don't want to presuppose it. So I've got implementation guideline P in at the moment. Now, the other discussion we had on that, Chuck, is whether staff should be the one to basically pre-process, to put it short, the objection, and basically should it be ICANN staff that receives an objection and says, yep, they've met the requirements to object, now we pass it on to the program, to the panel, or should the objection go directly to the panel and the panel decide whether the conditions of considering the objection be met? I think the reserved names recommendation went more to the latter, and that staff was basically just processing the paperwork, but as soon as there was an objection, they passed it on to the panel, and the panel had some mechanism for pre-review before going into full review. I'd like to check on that. Any initial discussion on it, though we may have to spend more time getting there in the next week.
It's Craig.
Craig, anyone else want to speak on it?
Philip.
Philip, anyone else? Okay. Craig?
Hi. In terms of how the objections process will work, the way staff envisions it now is that an external provider will be the recipient of the objection directly from the objector.
Oh, okay.
That the process, in order to maintain the impartiality that we're looking for in this element of the project, that much like WIPO and UDRP cases, all the paperwork from the parties go directly to the provider, and all the processes would be handled internally by the provider, and that there just would be a constant exchange of information between the provider and ICANN, as well as the provider and the parties to the objection.
Okay, great.
So that's the way we envision it now.
So in other words, at the moment, you
the latter.
Definitely don't you envision the latter. Okay, Philip.
Okay. I mean, I'm not that strong in it, but I was, and in fact, I was following, I think, what had already been a text where part of the process described the fact that the objector had to be this thing, and therefore process struck me as being something that staff would do. But for me also, it just mirrored the sort of objection processes we see in the outside world, where there's a difference between a valid objection and then there's judgment on the substance of the objection. And it struck me in terms of a simplicity of process and cost of process that it was a relatively easy thing to establish if an objection was valid, in the same way you establish if indeed an application for TLD is valid, and then these subsequent judgments, if necessary, come by the expert panel. It has struck me as being overly weighty, overly heavy, and costly, and time-consuming, and therefore costly, of course, for the applicant. If the expert panel had to decide on absolutely everything, so long as you've got a set of objective criteria on which you can assess the validity of an objection before you go to the substance of an objection.
Could I respond to that?
Sure.
Yeah, and Philip, I appreciate what you're saying there. Now, the two-step process can still happen within the panel. It probably doesn't. It might be cheaper for ICANN staff to do it than the panel, and I think your point's well taken there. But you could still have the panel do the two-step process, so that if step two, one doesn't work, isn't successful, they don't go on and expand.
Right,
they throw
it out at that point. Yeah. Right. That's it. I mean, I'm neutral on the issue.
Okay.
I was more concerned about the delay and cost from the applicant's perspective rather than the objectors here.
Okay.
Right.
I have John, and then I'd like to sort of finish up on this one. Okay, John?
Yes, I agree. I'm rather neutral as well, and I agree with what you've been saying, but I've seen that for instances like an appeal tribunal or something, they'll form a small group or perhaps only one person, and that has the advantage that if it is valid, but it obviously will not be affirmed. They may have been given delegated the competence to give the final word at that first stage rather than go to a full panel procedure. Whether that is useful or not depends on the volume of decisions to be made.
Okay, so yeah, as I see it, I think the rationale is consistent with the staff implementation idea, and I don't know that we want to take the next step down into, you know, that level of organizing the process at this point. So my suggestion is that we leave things as they are, and you know, later we'll be able to review the implementation response to this and see if there are any other issues. Does that seem a okay way to go? Anyone object to just leaving it as it is and letting the implementation basically suggest how the panel would process it, understanding that there is a concern about, you know, stages of processing, et cetera? Any objection to moving on? Okay. Moving on, and we're running a little bit late on the schedule, but I think we've achieved a lot, is implementation guideline Q. Now, during the discussions of 20, basically an issue had come up of sort of saying, well, what about public comments? When a public comment is made and, you know, these people should really be doing an objection process or one of dispute resolution processes, how do they know? And the discussion came out basically that the staff should have an automatic response mechanism. Now, Chuck recommended language that was within the recommendation 20, but in the discussion in the group, basically the opinion was that this is a wider concern than just 20 and relates to any of the dispute or opposition mechanisms. So basically Chuck had recommended language that said ICANN staff will provide an automatic reply text to all those who submit public comments that will explain the objection procedures. I amended that for guideline 2 and generalized it to say ICANN staff will provide an automatic reply to all those who submit public comments that will explain the dispute and objection procedures. Since in some of the other implementations, sometimes the staff is talking about a dispute mechanism, sometimes it's talking about an objection mechanism, and basically just generalizing it to whenever there's a comment that pertains to one of these, the staff will automatically get back to them and say, this is what you need to do. I'd like to open the meeting to discussion on accepting implementation guidelines here.
Just a follow-up comment.
Chuck, anyone else? Okay, Chuck.
Yeah, and what you're saying, Aubrey, is consistent with what we decided in the group yesterday. So I don't see it so much as an amendment as what we really agreed to yesterday, that it has broader implications than just 20.
Yeah. Thank you. But I did change the text.
Yeah, okay.
Does anyone want to comment on this further? Does anyone object to implementation guideline Q being added to the document? Can I call it broad support? Anyone object to calling it broad support? Okay, does anyone want to register any concerns about it at this point? Obviously, you can later, but... Okay. So, I will include that in the report, that there is an implementation guideline Q that reads, ICANN staff will provide an automatic reply to all those who submit public comments that will explain dispute and objection procedures. The next item on the agenda was review OpenStaff implementation questions. There were two. One, referring to Section 2.3 of the Staff Discussion Points document, where are disputes objections to geographical names dealt with? I'll read both of them, and then we'll discuss each of them separately. And two, referring to Section 373 of the Staff Discussion Points document with respect to Recommendation 7, what evaluation of technical does evaluation of technical capabilities need to take into account more factors than the applicant's stated purpose only? And I'm not sure even that it needs to take that into, but we need to discuss that. So referring to the first one, where are dispute objections to geographical names dealt with? There was a response sent by the on the list, which basically says that will fall under Recommendation 20. And indeed, I guess that's part of it being used to have that. You never know what you're going to get to have GAC as one of the organizations that can produce established organization for the purposes of making an objection.
Yeah.
So basically it was seen as coming under 20. I'd like to open the floor to discussion on that. Anyone want their name on the queue? No names on the queue. So does that mean that everyone agrees that the answer to, does anyone disagree that the answer to the staff on this one is geographical names are to be handled under 20 and under the objection process in 20? No one disagrees with that? Any more clarification from the staff required on that one at this point?
This is Robin. I have a question. What would be the alternative? I'm just trying to understand. I understand what's being asked.
I'm not sure what the alternative would be. I don't have one. I think it's under 20, but it's just that the question had been there, that's the answer we gave, and I just want to make sure that it's agreed. Anyone else see an alternative?
I suppose, and I'm not advocating this, but I suppose that some countries that think they own a language might think it comes under 3. I don't think that's true, but I also believe it's under 20.
Avery, it's Miriam. Do you want me to try to answer that question for you?
Please, yes.
Well, obviously, none of us can speak for the GAC, But there is a GAC principle that was adopted earlier with respect to CCTLDs and then again more recently with respect to GTLDs that says that certain geographic names in their specific categories in their recommendation, in their principle, should be avoided without the agreement of the relevant public or governmental authorities.
And so, and we have on the council's agenda basically how do we respond to that. And there may also be the creation someday of a new reserve names category, though at this point the only reserve name category that has been created has to do with the two-letter CCTLD. So, yes, I believe there's an open question.
Carrie, comment on this too, please.
Certainly. So I'll just finish what I was saying. So at the moment, I believe that the council, or at least this committee, has come back sort of saying it's under the objection process, and even the reserve names group had recommended that they will certainly be informed when anyone wants to take one, and then they can object. Carrie.
Just noting what Chuck said, I think we have to be very careful about confusing the legitimacy with which a government might claim to have some rights to the name of the country that it governs and the rights that a government might have over the language that's spoken in their country, especially given the fact that there are only a couple of languages that are spoken in one country and one country only.
And then those are usually spoken in that country's diaspora in any case.
Well, discounting the diaspora. I mean, there are a couple of almost unary, we are the only country that uses this language as its language of government. But once you get into the diasporic context, component of all of this, there is simply no such thing as language ownership.
No.
And we have to be very careful about differentiating between the kinds of things that countries might claim to own and the ability to establish any such claim whatsoever for some of those things and not for others. So toponyms may, I suppose, belong to the government. That toponyms could conceivably belong to the governing entity, but language can't. So there's two different kinds of things that we're likely to get
by
mad with
here. Place names?
The place names is one thing.
Right. But
the languages in which
country,
place names
right.
are expressed is something quite
yes.
different.
Okay. Any other information we want to add to this interpretation? So one of we might see, I guess the outcome is we could see an objection under 3 based on language. We should see it under 20, and that can certainly be part of the recommendation. And I believe that we still have a much larger open issue that's not on this committee's table at the moment in terms of the whole relationship with the CCNSO and the GAC on IDN reserve names that I don't see us either getting into or resolving in the context of new GTLDs, and that just remains a pending question. Because it's been, you know, it's been made a question at the board level, and as a council, we have the responsibility to deal with the board questions at that level. But I don't see us being able to do much about it. So for now, I would say, yes, it's in 20. But we'll see where it is once things are finished. Any further comment on this one? Okay. Going to the next one, referring to Section 373 of the Staff Discussion Points document with respect to Recommendation 7, does evaluation of technical capabilities need to take into account, I'll almost read it as, other factors? And this includes then the application's stated purpose only. And I'd like to open that up to discussion. Anyone want to comment on that?
I can start.
Please do.
Okay, and then I sent this via the list, so I assume all of you have seen it. As I recall, we had quite a lot of discussion, not only on the technical requirements, but on business and operational requirements and so forth, in terms of what should be required. And as I recall, we recognized that different types of GTLDs might require different levels of technical requirements and so forth, with the clear understanding that all of them have to meet some minimum standards for security and stability and interoperability. And so my understanding from what we talked about a long time ago in the committee was is that, yes, there are some minimal standards that have to be applied to everyone, but depending on the purpose of the TLD, you know, everybody, all TLDs don't have to be a .com. That's my recollection of our committee work.
Yeah, I recommend basically that we only got so far as to define a base level that all had to show would be covered, and that we didn't get into the sort of scalability of registry issues.
Right.
That basically everyone had to meet a basic level. And so it really seems that we're saying that, you know, that was the case. And now there's an issue in defining what that basic level is. We didn't do that and sort of said that's an implementation issue of what the basic level is. But
right.
My understanding is that it hadn't been relevant to anything other than the basic level of support.
That's fine. That's consistent with my thinking.
Right. Does anyone want to add anything to that? And does that cover it for the staff?
Avery Philippi, I just to say, I think that's certainly consistent with my recollection of our discussions on the group. We were making this an absolute standard, not a relative standard.
Right. And then I think when we see the staff's recommended standard, then there may be comments from the community, from us, from whatever, that sort of say, wait a second, why is that in the basic set? Isn't that for a .com scale and not for a little guy? And that discussion still has to happen. But that's really an implementation discussion of what is in that basic set. And I don't know that that the community has had that discussion yet. Does that sort of cover it? Anybody want to comment on that further? Staff, Craig, is this an acceptable answer, or do you need more?
No, I feel like it's an acceptable answer, that internally we've been working from a minimum set of requirements that will be developed. They are not yet, but I think it's consistent with what everybody's been saying.
Okay, thank you. So any more comments on this topic before moving on? Okay, thank you. The next thing was review action items.
Actually, Aubrey,
yeah?
This is John Nevitt.
Okay.
You had something earlier on the agenda that we didn't touch on yet.
Oh,
that
sorry.
I had one issue with, and that's recommendation 19 that we talked about last week.
Right, yeah. No, I've gone through it briefly.
Yeah, you went through it in the very beginning,
but I thought already on it.
And I just have a very quick point. I received an email from the grammar police that there's one grammatical mistake in there that we might want to fix.
Ah, please. Okay, let me get that in front of me so that we can quickly talk about that.
And I think it will be a very quick conversation.
Okay, and the grammar. Oh, that's right. You did send me email on that, and then I didn't put it on the schedule. I apologize.
No problem. The word between in the
yes, it should be
last
among.
Line should be among, because apparently between is only between two entities, where among is between many.
Okay. So just want to quickly check. We have broad consensus on registries must use only ICANN-accredited registrars in registering domain names and may not discriminate between such accredited registrars. And we have the proposal to change it to registries must use only ICANN-accredited registrars in registering domain names and may not discriminate among such accredited registrars. Does anyone object to the change?
Carrie doesn't object to the change, but I'd like to point out that it's actually quite correct the way it is. Between is appropriate in any comparison between one registrar and another, and that's actually what's the issue here. So I think actually that a truly skilled grammarian does not object to the way that statement is made.
So, but you're not objecting to making the change?
The change is not, doesn't make it incorrect, but if
it's
we
a
believe
multilateral comparison.
It's incorrect and we're making it correct, we're wasting our time. Either way is fine.
Okay, it's not
shall
a bilateral comparison, it's a multilateral. Does anyone else?
Shall we say between or among? And I'm just being funny here.
Right, okay, thank you. Yes, we're considering it a multilateral non-discrimination as opposed to a bilateral non-discrimination.
But the word between does, it is applicable in situations where more than two things are being compared. So, we're not grammarians, I suppose.
Right,
so.
We should have that one over a beer.
just in case you want the OED description, they make precisely the discussion we're having, which is that the original restriction relations involving only two limits still tends to be observed, wherever among is adequate for higher numbers, but this is changing. So I think the both points being made are entirely right and reflect a change in the language.
I see. Does anyone object to changing it as I've read? Thank you. It's been changed. So 19 now says among. And yeah, language is disintegrated. Okay, going back. You were in less is one of my favorites. So the review the action item list, let me pull that up. I have that. Okay, on the action item list, we had initial impact statements done. Resolve recommendation number 3, done. Although we do have the question that Liz has brought up for re-looking at 3. Resolve recommendation 19. Discuss open implementation implication issues, update on open issues. I don't know if there'll be another update, but we have discussed them in this meeting. And I don't know, will there be an update of the note before we do our last discussion, which is next week, or is this essentially done and any other conversations will happen in the council or after? This is a question for Liz Craig. Any comment on that one?
I'm sorry, Abby, one more time.
Basically, we had to discuss open implementation issues. We've discussed the two in this meeting that were still open. There, you know, I don't know if we expect like an update of your note before this committee finishes. And so that was a question.
I don't want to speak for Craig, but from my side, every no, not at the moment, because I'm going to be concentrating on drafting the report. Craig or Miriam might have a different view about the pieces of work that may have been outsourced that might well cover some of the issues that have been raised today. So from my side, no, on the assumption that it seems to me that the text for the recommendation has been agreed and I can now complete writing the report, but the implementation notes that Craig is responsible for is well within his purview to answer.
So perhaps what we should do is indicate that it's probably done, but since we just finalized text on 6 and 20 and P and Q, they that leave it open for next week's agenda that if the staff has any further
mm-hmm.
questions for clarification on especially on the change thing.
Yep.
And this may be when we cover your 3 issue. If we don't get to it today or get in depth in it today,
yep.
Then so does that seem reasonable?
Yeah, whatever fits the group.
Open
I think
for next week that
yep.
if there are any other implementation mm-hmm. issue questions, mm-hmm. we'll deal with them at next week's meeting.
I think, Avery, though, from my side, now that it seems to me that the text is stable, are you proposing to hold just a 1 week consensus call,
I'm planning to do, and as we have another meeting scheduled for next week,
yep.
and I'm planning to go through the recommendations as written when people have had a time to see them
yep.
and discuss them and make sure that they don't need any, you know, that the broad support level that's there is there.
Yep, okay.
And then move on from there. But if there's any other clarification questions, it seems worth taking them. The consensus call was scheduled to come out after you've produced the new document,
yep, okay.
which will probably happen before next week, though it may happen. It was originally scheduled for the 30th.
It won't happen before the 30th.
Right. So,
because I need to reflect the discussion that goes around the various points that people have raised, and there's a lot of redrafting.
Right, I understand.
Yeah.
But in that regard, what would be really helpful, I believe, Liz, is that if we could have the shortly the list of recommendations where we're at right now, so that all of us can.
Well, isn't my list good enough? And this,
yeah, that's
basically correct.
Yeah.
The list that I've been putting out. Those
mm-hmm.
are that's supposed to be the authoritative list for the recommendations.
And I, Avery, I really wanted to say it because it's a really good way of doing it. So if you could just send it out after this meeting.
I will.
Then
I'll
leave
send it out
it.
Later today.
Yeah, super.
I'll do the same thing I've done before. I'll send it to you and Chuck first to make sure that I haven't blown the wording.
Yep. Okay.
And then I'll send it out to the whole group.
And just one formatting matter. Implementation guideline P is so long that when you put it in a PDF, it doesn't all show up in the cell.
Okay, so I'm going to have to break. Yeah, I'm going to have to break.
Yeah. Either that, or if it's in Word, you can format the table to cover that. But just that's just a.
Yeah, that's one of the places where Neil Office and Word are still slightly off. But anyway, and I don't use Word. Okay. So there may be new discussion, new questions next week on implementation implications, but for now it's done.
Yeah.
Resolve recommendation 6 is done. It will be looked at next week, just to, you know, after it's settled for a week. Same thing with 20. There is reserve names for new GTLDs. There had been several items on it. The last thing left on the item was feedback on ICANN IANA names, because Liz has received various the new examples and other questions have been answered. On other issues on new GTLDs, I believe all the issues have been merged into the various recommendations, but perhaps there's something that's missing. Marilyn, you brought up the issue at the beginning. Is there something relevant to new GTLDs that's not covered? In the
Sorry, I'm not sure there is. I was just interested in whether we had actually seen the recommendation on the fact that single letters and numbers at the second level in new GTLDs were no longer reserved. And I think from what you just said, you think that language has been incorporated.
I believe, Chuck, would you?
Well, I'm not sure. I think there was some debate as to whether or not there should be that reservation requirement should be removed until the issue with regard to existing TLDs is resolved for equity purposes. And it seems to me that we ended up with the conclusion that we would leave the requirement there until such time that the bigger issue is resolved. But please correct me if my memory is wrong.
I don't remember it that way. There was one person who an observer from the GAC who had expressed that concern, but I went back through the transcript to try to make sure that I understood what we were doing, and I thought that there was broad support from the rest of the group for moving ahead with releasing of single letters and second level for new GTLDs. And that we were expecting some further staff work on the existing GTLD.
Okay.
I'm perfectly okay with that. I recall from discussion there.
First of all, I think most of this shows up in the implementation and will show up in the prospective contract.
Right.
I think that after, so it doesn't really go in any of these recommendations. I think that one of the things that was brought up in that discussion is the question of fairness and implementation that is in one versus the other. I think that's something that needs to be taken up at the council level in terms of whether there needs to be a connection between the two. The council does have dealing with the reserved names issue as a work item. And so, and it wasn't just the one GAC person. There were several, and I basically believe that they did bring up a question that needs to be reviewed on whether, you know, the fairness principle and the parity principle sort of, you know, indicate that we need to reserve this. Now, there is one viewpoint that sort of says, let's get the work done quickly on both of them so it's not an issue. But I do believe it's an implementation issue that, that still needs to be discussed in implementation space. But I don't believe it's a work item for this committee at this point.
And Aubrey, I think you've just answered the question that I had, which is how is this being addressed? And I gather the ICANN IANA names, you had said that's also an implementation issue, and we are expecting...
we're expecting feedback from the staff on that one.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Aubrey, for next week, we might want to add another item to our agenda and action list. And Bruce Tonkin raised an interesting question with regard to the dispute or complaint procedures, whether or not they're a yes-no answer or a dispute resolution process. And it might not be the same in every case. And I thought that Christina made a very good suggestion in response to that. So I suggest that we talk about that.
I've added it to next week's other issues and things that we could talk about on the list.
And if you would, sorry, just go back, Marilyn, would you just go back then? So the I would expect to see any further discussion about both IANA names and the single level under the single letter, under the implementation topic.
I essentially believe so, yes.
Okay.
But we'll probably come back and just talk about this some more in the next meeting.
Okay.
And we will be mostly talking about implementation issues, hopefully, in the next meeting.
And, Aubrey, what I will do is send out a latest status report on the reserve names recommendations as they relate to new GTLDs only.
And I'll try to put together with you a list of the open issues that we need to sort of discuss around in the next. Okay, update impact statements and final comments. That is tomorrow. And it's the end of the day tomorrow, any time zone. I ask all of us, myself included, to make sure that we get those in to Liz because she needs to finish the report. I think that, you know, after we've given them to her, we will have a chance in that final one to look at it and make sure the wording came out right and got transferred correctly. But we have that as a deadline for tomorrow. We've now stabilized pretty much on the recommendations. There won't be any major changes. You know, I don't think any changes we make will be bigger than among or between. At least I hope they won't be any bigger than that. So I ask everyone to get their impact updates to impact statements and any final comments, especially from those participating in the committee as individuals, in tomorrow.
Aubrey, I apologize for saying this because I understand the undesirability of it, but considering we've just now come close to finalizing two or three of the recommendations, tomorrow is really tough to deal with it. I don't think the impact is going to be huge, but I don't know until we test it.
To ask that anyone to deal with later than the 20th make a bilateral agreement with Liz, who has to process all this. So I would prefer to ask that people try to get it done by the end of the day tomorrow, and if they can't, to work with Liz. Liz, does that make sense to you? Because I know you don't have time. We're pushing on the schedule. We need to have a report out by the 30th if we're going to meet our schedule.
Abby, thanks very much for being kind to me on my timing. I would really appreciate it if everyone had whatever they needed to have to me by tomorrow, but I understand that now that we've just finalized a whole lot of stuff, people need a little bit of time to think. There's something of a trade-off here. If the text for the recommendation is stable, which I believe it now is, then that enables me to go back through the very detailed 60 pages of Part A and make sure that everything hangs together. Could I ask you then to use the 25th of July as your cutoff date for getting things to me? If you get them to me sooner, I will be really, really grateful. But I understand that you do want to take time to do that. I'm happy with that, and there's a lot for me to do between now and the 25th to make sure it all hangs together. But I've been putting placeholders in the document as we've been going along
to
make sure it's
not like to actually ask an amendment on you. It's very nice you're moving it to the 25th. I would like us to try to get it in by the 20th, and anyone that can't get it in by the end of today,
sure,
to let you know when they will,
yep,
with the 25th. As a absolutely,
yep,
positively.
I'll not accept anything after the 25th.
Will that work for you, Chuck?
Oh, yeah, that's
okay.
Fine.
Okay. So
Aubrey?
If you can't get it in by tomorrow, let Liz know.
Yes,
Aubrey?
Yes?
Yeah, this is Ken Stubbs. I think Chuck indicated our concern, but from a practical standpoint, I think that given the changes that were made today, we need to have the opportunity to get the information out to the various registries and let them take a look at it. So I think that from a practical standpoint, the comments that Liz made, you know, if anything, that's the outside date. Anything else would be good news. I don't think that the 20th is a practical deadline for us. If we make it, that's great, but I don't want somebody saying how disappointed they are, you know.
I understand. One of the things that I'd like to ask, and Liz, you can say if this makes sense, and we're at time, but I want
mm-hmm.
to go through this,
sure,
is that if everybody's got everything agreed to other than their comments on 6 and 20, that they get that stuff to you.
Immediately.
And then the stuff,
yep,
that needs further conversation can drift in a little later.
Yep, that's right. Thank
right.
you.
Okay,
that's
so
fine.
Is that okay?
Yes, that's fine. Thank you, Robert.
Anyone else? Okay, so even if you can't get it all in, get as much in as you can,
yeah,
as quickly as you can.
Yeah, that's really critical. Thank you.
Okay, so then there's an updated draft for final committee review. Liz had told the council that she would try for the 23rd. We've obviously made that impossible, so it'll need to be the 30th.
Yep,
which
right.
was the original date that
exactly.
we tried to back down from.
Yep.
Final review of final draft is listed for August 10th, so it'll be a one-week consensus call based on the July 30th draft. The council vote is on the 7th. We've basically finished by... We finish by 7 August, and then there's a month of processing and public review and council review and all kinds of stuff that goes on. The council vote is scheduled for the 7th on this. Basically, the whole meeting will be dedicated to that.
I think it's the 6th, isn't it?
Oh. Don't you mean the 9th?
No, it's the 9th.
Oh, my word.
Wait, month are we? The council doesn't
Why
make
Why don't
it
we have some time rather than an announcement rather than hypothesize?
Aubrey,
yes, yes.
The decision by the council is on 6 September.
6 September, yes. Yes, the council meeting for August is on the 9th, but the council meeting for decision on this is 6 September. Exactly.
Yes.
Thank
yes.
you for correcting me. It's not hypothetical. It's just me having a problem with dates. And then we had the report from the working group dealing with reference implementation for RPMs, for rights protection mechanisms, is October 15th. And one of the things that was listed is within Liz's rework of the document, there will be a note that there will be implementation, not guidelines, but, yeah, implementation guidelines.
Yep.
Okay.
Just a point of clarification. What is there to discuss for next Thursday?
That was the open issues.
Yeah.
So that we have the consistency of wording in 3 and 6. We're not going to get that today. I expect that we should look at that on the list while you're finishing up the document to see whether there's anything. We've had this discussion before, and basically each time we've had it, we've ended up saying, 3 is 3, and it stays as is. So that's happened several times. We even had a specific discussion on do we change the examples list because the other examples list had changed, and those times the answer came back no. So we can still talk some more about the consistency between them, but so far it's remained stable, and, you know, this may produce a implementation clarification question at our next meeting. We have the dispute resolution, pursuit procedure, yes or no question that Bruce brought up. We have any other implementation questions that come up related to this. And I think that's what we have on the docket for next week.
Avery, Philippa, just a clarifying question. On IDNs, is our report clear and are we aligned as a group that we see nothing in our work to prevent immediate implementation of IDNs with this?
Yeah, I think that was one of our recommendations that we haven't touched in a long time.
Right. And the fact there was external discussion going on is a nice thing to know, but it doesn't change what we're saying as a group. Is that correct?
I believe so. In other words,
okay.
I'm looking for that one, but we've basically...
I mean, if it's explicit in the report somewhere, then that's fine. I just wanted to
yes, it is.
Be clear.
Philip.
That's what we're at. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Anything else that needs to be talked about today? Okay, in which case, I thank you all, especially for staying here for 5 minutes, and see you online.
Thanks, Aubrey.
Thanks, Aubrey. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.